It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 288. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, Matt and I discuss the six things we're looking for in fall camp, including who the offensive playmakers might be. Also discussed on this episode, we preview LSU, we talk about Jemmer to China and Mika to Italy, and we also discuss the chances of a very special season in 2017. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. Get this and other great podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcasts. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to Matt and I right now. Well, Matt, you and I just got done recording one of the best podcasts in podcast history.
It was gold. It was pure gold, baby.
Pure gold, 40 minutes in, and the power went out at my house, and it was gone. Gone.
It's sad that the world will never have that podcast.
Yes, it is sad that they will never have that podcast. But unfortunately, they will never have that podcast. So what are you going to do?
We're going to do even better right now.
That's right. That's right,
we
are.
We're going to pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and get right back on that horse.
That's right. So here we go. Let's start this off by hitting the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
This is from Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
At Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He asks us, why the switch to the weekend format? Well, basically so the power can go out at my house and we can record it twice. That's why
Nothing
we're doing
better.
It on the weekend.
Nothing better.
No, it's mainly work travel, Justin. I've just had some trips that required some extracurricular activities at night. And so, you know, just wasn't able to record podcasts while on the road.
Some mandatory work fun.
Some
gotta love it.
Mandatory
I love
work
Mando fun.
Fun. Hey, nothing better than being the only sober guy at a work of function. The only one
really,
with a clear memory.
There really isn't, though.
Nobody else will remember this perfectly like you will. That's fantastic. It's the best. It's the best, Matt. So let's jump into the CougarFan.com, Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, Eric Mika has signed to play professional basketball.
Yeah, way to go, Eric.
With the Italian League. So it's not, maybe not as exciting as the NBA, but still pretty exciting. So he's signed to play.
I think if you're Eric Mika, it's pretty exciting.
Yes, I would say so. He signed to play with the club Palancestro Pissarro.
Palancestro Pissarro.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
I don't speak Italian.
No, you don't. No, you clearly don't.
I like Italian subs.
Yeah, those aren't really Italian. Liga Basket Serie A. Serie A? I don't know how you say that in Italian either. It's the top league in Italy. Matt, so congrats to Eric Mika. I think we wish him best luck in his new basketball career in Europe.
Do you think this is really kind of what he had on his radar the whole time?
I think this is likely where he had his sights at, and that's why many of us who thought he was making a mistake by going pro because we didn't think he'd get a shot at the NBA, I think we may have misjudged where he thought he was going to land.
Yeah.
So
seems like a pretty good situation, though. Way to go,
yeah.
Eric.
Yeah, I mean,
go get him.
I'd love it if he was still in white and blue this season. I think we'd be a better team. But again, his life, more power to him. And if this is where he wants to be and, you know, served his mission there, speaks the language. And by the way, I've been in Italy several times for business. It's a fantastic country, so a lot worse places you could live in the world.
Heard great things.
Speaking of living somewhere else in the world, Jemmer Fredette, Matt, there is a report that he will re-sign with the Shanghai Sharks. According to David Pick, who is an international basketball reporter, he's going to re-up with the Sharks for a deal of about $1.8 million, according to a source that that Pick has. Matt, reactions to him re-signing with the Shanghai Sharks?
Not at all a surprise. Excited for Jemmer. I think it's a lot of fun. I look forward to seeing some more Shanghai Sharks highlight reels.
Yes, for sure. For sure. And you and I got to go get those shoes. We got to get those Jemmer shoes.
Yeah, they make all sorts of stuff, these guys. They're like the like the Nike of China or something.
You just made that up.
Well, I think most Nike stuff's actually made in China.
The Nike of China, I believe, is called Nike.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. So anyway, averaged almost 38 points, 8 boards, 4 assists a game last year for the Sharks, and we'll look forward to seeing, as you said, more highlights of Jimmer. So, Matt, we got a couple of things we wanted to talk about today. The first one is, I'll go first, then you go second. The first one is we're going to have our second annual. Can you say second annual, or does it have to be third before you say annual?
I think if your intent is for something to be annual, you can go ahead and call it that.
Oh, sure. All right. Fire away then. Second annual listener survey, Matt. So
this is where we give the power back to the people.
That's right, we do. So you can complain and whine about something you're getting for free.
As if we get a lot of complaining and whining. I mean, seriously.
No, we get almost none because basically it's easy. If you don't like the show, there was a comment on the Deseret News, by the way. They did not like our analysis of, I forget which off-season analysis they didn't like. They thought we'd lean too heavily on Bill Connolly's off-season preview of the team. Whoever it was, Mississippi State, maybe.
Perhaps a fair criticism. I don't know.
Well, Connolly, he's the best. If I'm going to lean on somebody's offseason, and there's only so many things that are written, right? Like for some of these teams offseason, not everybody's LSU, where if you do LSU 2017 football preview, you get like 80 articles, right? Like all written in the last 2 weeks, you know,
right? Or yesterday.
Yeah, it's a little different for Boise State. You know, so anyway, but you're going to get the chance to respond on this survey. Similar questions to what we did last year for those of you that participated. And this feedback, we actually incorporated. For example, you told us to stop talking about Major League Baseball, and we drastically reduced this past year the amount of time we spend on Major League Baseball. So, you know, well done. Well done, listeners. Still angry about that.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I'm still a little bit bitter about it.
It's like we're not in charge of our own podcast anymore.
We're kind of not, though.
So anyway,
you got to give the people what they want.
That's right, you do. So this will be in the show notes. So if you're somebody that listens to the podcast through the article on the Deseret News, you'll need to click through in that article to iTunes or to Podbean to get the link. It will not be in the story that appears on the Deseret News. Matt, why don't you share with us what you wanted to talk about today?
So we've talked about this before, but I just wanted to catch up with everybody on what's going on here. So as those of you who've been listening to the show are aware, I will be running the New York City Marathon in November, raising money for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And the reason I'm doing that this year is that 2017 marks 25 years since we lost our older brother Mitch to suicide, who at the time was actually a freshman at BYU. And so I was looking for an opportunity to do something to mark that marker in time, and found a really good opportunity to mix this fundraising opportunity with something that I really love to do, which is running. So I'm training to run that marathon in November. I've got a fundraising page up. I've committed to raise $3,500 for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, which is an organization that provides support for families who are surviving the suicide of a loved one. They help advocate for smart legislation around mental health and education for the public around mental health. So really good organization that I feel good about, addressing something that obviously is important to both you and I, and an opportunity for me to participate in a race that's really kind of a bucket list type item. You know, it's the biggest marathon in the world and all this. So it's a really, really exciting opportunity. There's going to be a link in the show notes if you'd be interested in participating in my fundraising efforts. But at the very least, if you're not in a position to do that, I encourage everybody to spend some time on afsp.org and become a little bit educated about how you may be able to reach out and be there for somebody you love. You never know when you're going to be in a situation where you're going to want to have that type of information or know where to find those types of resources. So it's an exciting thing. I'm really excited to be able to do it. I think about the race constantly, and the training I have found over the past couple weeks since I started doing it, I'm motivated in a much different way as I try and do something tangible around a cause that's important. So it's a lot of fun, and I appreciate any support.
So how many miles are you running this week?
So this week I will run 31 miles. And so I've been running half marathons for the past few years, as you and I have talked about. So this will be the most miles I've ever run in a single week. And in the next, over the next couple weeks, I'll also run my longest single run. And then every week I will be breaking that record for the next several weeks until I get up to my big weeks in the training cycle are 50 mile weeks, which include 20 mile runs. So that's a lot of running. I'm going to run 617 miles over the course of the whole program. I've run about 100 of them. So I've got a little over 500 miles left to go.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, that will be in the show notes, so you guys can check that out, and would encourage you to do that. So Matt, let's jump in and talk about football.
Here we go.
Thursday camp.
Football is back, baby.
Oh, yeah. I'm very excited. It's real.
You know, I've been watching. I'm just fixated on this. ESPN's been doing these top 25 games from 2016. If you were on Twitter, I think it was last week, they had the BYU, was it BYU-Toledo game that was on. And I can't stop watching these games. Every night I'm watching one of these games. The camp opening up means we're that much closer to real games.
Yes, real games. Real games, Matt. How many days do we got?
Too many.
I'm going to look that up right now. This is exciting for the listeners.
They love Adam, it. They love listening to you work the Google machine, Adam.
Looking
they
love up it. On Google, next game is in 33 days, 17 hours.
And you can tell that we didn't. You can tell we didn't cite this the first time we recorded this show because you had to look it up.
Well, it would have been a whole hour different.
Oh, look at that!
How can I do that kind of complicated math?
No, you
Matt.
Can't. That's math.
Math.
That's
math. Math. Math, Matt. Sorry.
You're not a mathematician.
That joke wasn't in the first one.
Well, no, it well wasn't.
Done, sir. And hopefully it will never be in another one again. Okay, Matt.
It's coming back tonight. That's not the only time tonight I'm going to make that joke.
Brother. Yeah. Why don't you climb into the tweed bag and take that joke with you? All right.
Climb on in.
So Matt, Jeff Call of the Deseret News basically, you know, talks about how In a recent article, since 2011, BYU has not won double-digit games. Okay, that was the last time. And 8 or 9 wins consistently over the season since then. Matt, you know, kind of sets up, could this be the year? So, Matt, could this be the year BYU wins 10 games?
Oh, man. See, this now we're getting into it. This is just like we talked about.
Just like
there's
last
no
week's.
New information. We're just sitting in the echo chamber, and we're all getting excited. And it's only going to get worse the further we go into this show. It only gets worse.
Yep.
But maybe it is. Maybe it is.
That's not what you said last time. You're such
I know,
a waffler.
But now we've had all those other conversations that we're about to have now for the listeners. And it's exciting. No, but listen. let's go back to what I said.
You're
an
absolutely
hour
ridiculous.
We were talking about this before. You're ridiculous.
It's true.
Listen, nothing is different about this schedule than it has been for weeks. This is a tough schedule. We've got some questions around some key parts of the team. The coaching staff is still, you know, is still young in their tenure. Let's not get ahead of ourselves on year two here.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Mister Talking Yourself Out of Stuff. All right.
By the time we get to the end of this conversation, I'm going to be singing a different tune. I feel
be
like
saying we'll go undefeated. All right, Matt. So coming into camp, let's talk about each of us three things that we are excited to see, need to see in fall camp to feel better about a special 10-11 win season. So Matt, because I am who I am, as magnanimous as I can be, fire away. What's your first one?
It would not be a show if you didn't use the word magnanimous.
That's correct.
But
that correct.
The first one here, and I don't know if I'm going to do these in the same order we did them earlier. But
you better.
Nobody,
otherwise,
listen, nobody,
cheating.
Nobody cares about our comparison between this and the show that no one's ever going to hear.
I care about it.
So
stick to the script, buddy.
Oh, this might mess up the ones you pick, huh?
Oh,
all right,
I'm
well,
about to punch you in the throat.
This, you do this to me all the time. You ask me questions that aren't in the show notes.
I never would do such a thing to you. That's
you
ridiculous.
Do it almost every week. No, so here's what I'm going to tell you. All right. So three things we need to see in camp. What I'm interested to hear about is chemistry between Tanner Mangum and the tight end group. We've had a lot of conversation around this. I think that around who the tight end is going to be. I think we've heard the coaching staff consistently tell us, and consistently means at least once, that we're going to see a group of guys playing in that position. And we all understand that we're talking about Bushman and MLP, right? I think Baldry will come in and play a little bit, but those are really the two guys. And I think that that Bushman is really the prototype, in my opinion. Bushman's the prototype tight end of the future for this program. It's kind of getting back to our roots as a tight end. We've done a lot of converting guys from other positions and doing some other things. So I expect to see a lot of Bushman in 2017. I'm excited to hear about kind of how that rotation and how that chemistry works out in fall camp between Mangum, MLP, and Bushman.
About Mangum, MLP, and Bushman? Or you just mean not the competition, but the
talking about the chemistry between how he does, getting how the chemistry between Mangum and MLP is, and the chemistry between Mangum and Bushman. Because I think they're going to be used for slightly different things, the two of them. We may see both of them a little bit, but Bushman, in my opinion, is going to turn out to, in the long run, be the better tight end.
And I really want to see if we can get something going with the tight ends where you get multiple tight end sets, where if they're both above average pass catching threats, if they show that ability, then it creates some awesome mismatches on any down, right? So, I'm pretty excited. I'm with you. Mine is related to that, which goes to the wide receivers, Matt. Who's stepping up? Who's the go-to wide receiver? Who's number two and number three wide receivers? Is it Kurtz, Trenneman? Who's going to catch the most passes this year? The last few years, I feel like there's been a lot of hype around the wide receivers. This is going to be one of the most talented groups. No hype this year, which maybe that's better. I don't know. Maybe that takes some pressure off this group. I don't know if it really matters, but in the end, nobody's expecting much. There's a lot of question marks, a lot of inexperience. I need to feel comfortable by, and let's call Portland our preseason game, by the LSU game, like who has Mangum developed chemistry with where we feel like, in those first few weeks where we've got some big matchups against tough defenses, who's he going to be unloading the ball to?
Yeah.
So, Matt, what's your second one?
So my second one, I'm going to stick with offense here for a second, and I'm going to stay in the backfield. Let's talk about running backs for a minute.
All right, let's talk about running backs for a minute.
There's been a lot of conversation around this running back by committee type of approach, and when you're trying to replace a player like Jamal, it's hard to do, right? And I think you're on the record saying you don't see any of these guys carrying the same type of workload, compared to what Williams did last year in terms of percentage of the carries. And I don't know that we have a guy right here on this list that will do that in 2017. But what I'm interested to see is who's getting reps at the running back position. By the end of fall camp, is somebody starting to emerge as being the guy? Maybe not a feature back exactly like Jamal was, maybe not this early. While I would love to see that, who is it going to be? And you look at this list, you got five or six guys that theoretically are in the conversation. I think realistically you got two or three, of the guys on the roster right now. I think that the running back here is going to have the best impact or greatest impact on the program is going to be Ula Tolutau. I don't know if he gets there this season. Do you see a little bit more of Squally this season or who else here, is the guy? In the fall, does somebody emerge, or do we get into Portland State and LSU still in this committee scenario that perhaps carries the rest of the season? I don't know. But that's one of the storylines I'm looking for out of fall camp, is how we develop at the running back position, and hopefully we get to see somebody here emerge as kind of a feature back.
Yeah, I think Tolutau is the guy, by the way. I think he leads the team in carries. It may not happen right off the bat, though. We shall see. I think he's the most talented and will float to the top. But great questions, Matt. My second one, still staying on the offensive side of the ball, is backup quarterback. So the I was listening to a segment that Sports Nation had, I think it was this week or maybe the week before, where they were talking about the backup quarterback, and they shared some stat. I don't remember it, so I won't misquote it, and I couldn't find the segment. But they talked about how often a backup quarterback has played and how many games backup quarterbacks have even started, you know, the backup, say it, coming out of fall camp, and how many games they end up playing. You know, I don't think Tanner has any real danger of getting replaced for ineffectiveness. But if he does get hurt, is it Bo Hodge? Is it Detmer? I'm going to go with Hodge because I think he's the better athlete. And I think, you know, but I don't know. And maybe we'll know that by the end of the fall camp. We probably will. As my guess is they'll have it named a number two. But you never know, and we'll see. We'll see how that goes. All right, number three for you, Matt.
All right, so number three, I'm going to come over onto the defensive side of the ball, and I think I'm going to put this in the category of things that I'm hoping to see that are just going to get me excited. I don't know if there's a lot here that I'm looking to learn, but I think there's some possible storylines here that could get us excited for the season. And I think that's as we watch the development of the linebacker core and hear, you know, kind of who's being used and what types of positions in camp and, you know, who seems to be doing well and who's playing with what groups. Because I think there's a little bit more depth here at linebacker than maybe we realize on first glance. And we've talked about this a little bit, but you've got some guys to really be excited about, you know, in Powell, Bernard, Warner. You know, that's a great core group of linebackers there. But I think even if you go a little bit deeper on the depth chart, and I talked about Adam Pulsifer last week as a guy that I think has a chance to kind of to step up and to play a wider role. I think there's reasons to be excited about Kafusi and Unga and some of these guys. So you get into, you know, you get into these schemes where you're playing three linebackers and you've got, I think you may have pretty good depth, at least two deep in those types of situations. Get some fresh legs and keep people on their toes, and also put you in a position to adapt to a lot of things on offense, which is going to be important because the variety of offenses we're looking at in this season, it's pretty wide. So I'm excited about, you know, I was joking earlier about kind of the echo chamber of information when there's really no new data, but we all get excited. I'm looking forward to the types of stories or conversations with individuals of these guys or members of the coaching staff that are going to get me unreasonably excited about this linebacker core.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And they should be a good group, an exciting group. I'm going to stay right there on the front seven, Matt, and talk about the defensive line. So last year, had a hard time generating pressure with just the defensive line without blitzing. Added a lot of talent, got a lot of depth. Obviously, the biggest news is Taki Taki coming back after sitting out the 2016 season. That's huge because he was, 2015, he was an outside linebacker in that 3-4 scheme, had 7.5 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, right? He was a... I think he will be playing a lot. He will certainly be playing on any passing downs. Corbin Kafusi, who I think played well last year, but we need to see a step up. And then a ton of guys, defensive tackles and defensive ends, who are highly talented, many of them highly recruited. The question is, can Tuiaki put this together and put together an elite defensive line? If they can, with the linebackers you just described, I think this has a potential of being a top 20 defense. And if this is a top 20 defense, Matt, this could be a 10-win or 11-win team.
Well, yeah, you're going to have a top 20 defense if you want to get into that space, right?
Yep.
And I think that we've had a really similar conversation over many years where we talk about, well, the big question mark on the defense is defensive backs. But let's talk about those guys for just a second. I know that they're not in either of our top three.
You're sneaking in a fourth. You're sneaking
in
a fourth, you sneaker.
Well, I am going to sneak in a fourth here. Right. But let's look at the guys on this list. When we start talking about, you know, defensive backs, you got Warner, you got Hanneman, who, you know, both very talented guys and great athletes. You got Gonwoloku, who, you know, the famous joke from last year before he changed his name was 75% of the earth is covered in ocean and the other 25% is covered by lake. So I think that there's some real promise with the guys in the defensive backfield. I don't have the same level of questions I'm not saying these. I'm not saying that this is bulletproof. I'm not saying that this is, you know, Omar Morgan, Tim McTyre type of territory. But I think there have been seasons over the past couple of years where we've had some real question marks in the defensive backfield that we don't have today. And coupled with what you were just saying around the defensive line and the talent we have in the linebacker core, this could be a pretty good defense. Now, top 20, let's not get ahead of ourselves. All right, there, Adam. I mean, that's pretty serious. But
I'm willing to get ahead of myself. I just did it.
Do we have the athletes to get into that space? Maybe. And we certainly have the opportunity to find out if we're that good, given the teams that we're going to be up against. But if you want to win 10, 11 games, you want to win 11 games, these guys are going to have to be a top 20 defense.
Yeah, for sure. So Matt, let's talk about another interesting article in the Deseret News from friend of the podcast, Brandon Gurney. He talked about the top 10 incoming players and freshmen this fall. We're going to briefly go through that list and talk about some of them. You talked about some of the tight end depth. You did not mention incoming true freshman out of Moore Park, California, Bentley Hanshaw, 6'6", 220. Don't know, quite frankly, how much he'll play or not. You know, you got Baldery, Bushman, and of course, Putu.
Just go with MLP.
MLP.
Because we all know you're not going to pronounce it right. Just go with MLP.
Moroni, I can pull that off. So I don't know how much Hanshaw will play. Chaz A'u, I think he could be higher on this list, actually. A safety, true freshman, maybe the best player signed in this last class. Could provide depth behind Hanneman. We'll see if he ends up playing some more. Lange Tuifoa, I said it better last time.
You did. You were close there. Tuifoa.
I said it Tuifoa last time. I said it right last time.
You did.
Go back and check the tape.
I'll vouch for you there. I heard it. I heard it the first time. You're good.
So anyway, four-star defensive end, freshman. Austin Chambers, 6'4", 310-pound offensive lineman out of Kansas. He's coming back after a church mission in Las Vegas. He could provide some depth there. Not sure he'll play a ton. Chandon Herring, 6'7", 285. Just a little guy. Redshirt freshman, again, he was offered by Arizona and Arizona State. Go ahead, you got the next one. Uriah.
Leataua.
Leataua, 6'4", 265-pound defensive end out of Compton. He, again, LDS church mission to Samoa, coming back, add some depth. I think he'll end up playing a bit. Ula Tulutau, who we already talked about. I think he could be higher on this list. I think he could be number one. He's fourth on Gurney's list, but I think he could be number one.
I think when all said and done, of all these guys, he has the biggest impact on the program.
Yeah. Number three was Matt Bushman. Of course, we already talked about what kind of impact we think he'll have. Number two is a really interesting guy. That's Kiefer Longson, the 6'7", 320-pound redshirt freshman out of San Ramon. He had big-time offers, just got back from his mission in Toronto. Matt, this guy could start.
That's a full-grown man right there, 6'7", 321 pounds.
He's
and he ran with
guy.
The ones in the spring some. So yeah. I think this guy may start. At the very least, he's going to see time.
He's going to see time and fast. And by the end of the year, he may be one of the best ones we got. I mean, he certainly has the pedigree. We'll see if he can deliver on all that.
He's a giant.
And then Gurney cheats with his number one, Matt. I'm going to call it a little bit of a cheat, Brandon. He has Taki Taki as his number one newcomer. He's not. He left the program, so technically he is coming back, right? He didn't redshirt, technically, but, you know, anyway. Whatever, we know he's a fantastic player. So those are some.
He's going to have some impact. I mean, what does he do to offenses? You know, what do they have to do to deal with him, and what types of opportunities does that open up for the rest of the defensive line?
For sure. So that's one of the, you know, those are some of the players that we'll also be looking for and see what their roles are. You know, that group 6 through 10, besides A'u, there may not be much of a role this year. But that group, that top five that he talked about, they may all play pivotal roles in BYU's season this year. So keep your eye out for all of them. Jeff Kalmat in the Deseret News this week had a story about playmakers. I talked about who the wide receivers may be. And you talk about the running backs and the tight ends. Let's step back, Matt. Who's going to be the big playmaker on this offense? Who, when all is said and done, do you think we go back, besides Tanner Mangum, and say, that's the best offensive player on the field? Making a big difference. Who is it?
Well, there's part of me that wants to talk about offensive line there, but...
No. Playmakers.
I know. Playmakers.
No, stop it.
I know that
stop
means
it.
People who get to touch the ball, not people who... Whatever. So, but I think you're looking at somebody that we haven't talked about on this week, at least, is somebody like a Treneman.
Treneman, yeah. We just barely mentioned his name. That's all. We didn't talk about him. Could be. Could it be a 1,000-yard guy? Could he be... 16, 17 yards a catch guy? I don't know.
But I think in terms of impact, I'd go back to what I talked about before. I think you're looking at MLP and Bushman and, you know, the types of things that they're going to be able to line up to do. You get one of them on the slot. Maybe you get both of them on the field
at the same time. Wait a second. You just changed the topic because you didn't want to answer the question.
No, I did. I just
this
answered
is an
the question.
Impact? I want playmaker.
All right, fine. Playmaker's Treneman.
All right. Now
chicks love the long ball.
Chicks dig, I believe is the old phrase. Matt, let's talk about third and seven, third and five. Okay. So in the past several seasons, that down has been the Taysom down, right? Where he was as likely to run as not. Well, probably more likely to run. And he'd pick up those first downs. Though I think that will happen occasionally with Tanner because he does move pretty well. That's not going to be the go-to play on third and five, third and six. So who is the go-to player on those downs?
Can I go back to what I started to say a second ago?
Yes.
Because that's where I'm
going
to go.
I know that's where you're going.
So it's MLP and Bushman.
Yeah.
That's where you're going to go for those yards.
Yeah.
You know, and that really is, with the offense we're trying to run, that is where you should be going. In those types of situations.
But for the last few years, it has not been a tight end, right? It has been a wide receiver. It's been a Mitch Matthews. I don't know if we had one last year. Maybe Kurtz?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that we had somebody who fit the description of what you're really talking about.
What I'm talking about was Taysom. He just did it on his own.
You know, and if you go back, you know, in the history of BYU football and you look back at some of the really good teams, there have been guys who fit this description.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Pitta.
That did it differently. Pitta, I think, would be one. I think Atula Mealy.
Sure.
Is in that space back in the day.
Ben Cahoon, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm. So I think we've had guys that kind of fit that bill in those, you know, medium to long range types of situations. But
Matt Bellini?
Yeah, but we've had to do it in kind of a little bit of an unorthodox way the past couple of years.
Yeah, and you know it'll be interesting to see how that works out on those pivotal downs. Matt, back to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
And if you want to participate in the tweet bag, you can do so on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. You can talk to us on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout, or use email. Matt, do people still use that?
I don't know, but I encourage you all to climb on in.
Climb on in the tweet bag. That's to get to us on email. That's riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Matt, Gary Payne, that's @FastBreakGP on Twitter, asks this. Johnny Linehan at punter and best Twitterer, of course. But what about the kicking game? Haven't heard much on that. Have you guys? #tweetbag, #painbag. He has his own bag. Do we get to climb into the pain bag?
Not interested. Can't climb into the pain bag. I don't know what's going on in the pain bag. Like,
why don't we call it the bag of pain, Gary?
See, that makes it even worse. Why would I climb into the bag of pain? Why would I climb into something called the bag of pain?
It's spelled differently.
Doesn't make me feel any better. It's like when you see dentists whose last name is Payne, P-A-Y-N-E. I'm still not going to the guy.
Matt, you're about to run 30 miles in a week. You are getting into the pain bag, spelled with an I. What are you talking about? You'd run away.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, though. I'm actually really looking forward to that. But Anyway, right, so whatever. Anyway, don't climb into the pain bag. That's just my personal advice. No offense, Gary.
Obviously, Linehan, he owns Twitter and he owns punting. But it's Red Almond, right?
It's got to be Red Almond, right? I mean, that's, you know, unless there's somebody sneaking in here that we don't know about, like the guy I knew at BYU that convinced somebody that he was the backup kicker in order to meet people. But
did that work?
What?
Did that work?
It, for who?
For him.
Did people like,
oh, that's cool? Or did people like, because the backup kicker, like most people would care.
I'm not going to say that I have a lot of information on it. But I will tell you that on at least one, if not two occasions, it successfully worked in getting phone numbers.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. All right. I guess I need to go back in time and be a backup kicker.
Yep. And it wasn't, yeah, anyway, there's all, anyway, we don't need to get into the whole story.
All right, so anyway, it's Almond and Mickelson are who was on the depth chart coming out of Media Day. Matt, let's talk about Almond, what he is and what he isn't.
So, yeah, so what do you really need out of a kicker, right? I mean, is he a world beater, Almond? You know, you look at his career best last year was at Boise State at 37 yards. So I don't know if you'd say he's a world beater, but 39 of 40 on PATs and inside of his range, which is, you know, is that 37 yards and in, inside that range, he was 81%, 17 of 21 kicks, yeah. You know, including the game winner against Toledo and then a 3-game span where he hit 6 in a row against West Virginia, Toledo, and Michigan State.
Yeah.
So this is a guy, I mean, he's not going to go out there and light the world on fire. But I think you know what you've got. I think he's consistent inside of his range. PATs are no longer an adventure, right?
Yep.
And now you know as an offense that if you're outside that 37-yard range or if he's able to increase that a little bit over the offseason, I don't know. You don't get a lot of word on, you know, the strength training of kickers. But if he is able to bring that out a little bit, the coaching staff then knows that outside of that range, they're in four-down territory.
Well, you know, they
unless,
it,
unless they're in
so.
Punting space, right?
That's what I hope so, right? I really hope, but a lot of coaches will just like, well, let's just try a 45-yard field goal. No, not unless you have a guy that has a decent shot of making it. Like,
no,
there's no reason.
It's a better, statistically, it's a better use of the down to just go for it, you know, if you're right outside of his range. Because the chances of him making that 40-yard field goal, I think, are, you know, if inside that range is 80.95%, right?
Yep.
But outside of that range, your number's going to drastically go down.
Yeah, yeah.
And so your odds of making the first down are much greater. So you play four downs there.
Yeah.
But as long as you know that and can do that consistently, you're fine.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, Matt, let's talk about something that Jerome Jordan tweeted out. He talked about ESPN's FPI rating, okay? He tweeted this out a few days ago, 4 days ago, according to Twitter. And basically, BYU is only an underdog in 3 of its regular season games.
This is crazy.
LSU, only a 13.5% chance. That's not good of winning. Wisconsin, 25.2% at home. And then at Mississippi State, a 28.1% chance of winning. So not great. Besides that, though, no game is within that 50-something percent range. Next up is, as far as this ranking is concerned, is Boise State at 64% chance BYU wins. And then Utah at 66.4. And then it goes a lot higher after that. Okay? So think about this for a second. If you flip Utah's over, that means Utah has what, a 33.6% chance. That doesn't sound great. I'll take 2 out of 3, right?
I take 2 out of 3 there, yeah.
Yeah, and same with Boise, about 2 out of 3, right? So you look at this, the computers love BYU, Matt. So why do you hate BYU so much?
So, listen, I understand that this is objective and scientific and it's got robots and all this other stuff working on it. But,
robots?
You know, I
really? Robots working
robots.
On it?
Robots. Yeah, robots.
Okay. Whatever, buddy.
That's what I said. Robots.
That's how this works.
Okay, you don't think they have robots R2 working on this?
R2-D2 is calculating this.
They've got robots. Correct. This is ESPN. They've got robots.
Not anymore. They had to cut the budget. They don't got any robots anymore. It's some unpaid intern now.
Some of the personalities they kept, I think, might be robots. But anyway, it's just those decisions. I know it's not just about like the talent. Sometimes it's about the money. But you get what you pay for. So it's just why we're free. All right, I'm moving on. Now the Utah, I would have called that one a little bit closer. Boise State, I might have called closer, and Mississippi State, I would have called closer. I feel like, you know, saying that BYU's got a 25% chance of winning the Wisconsin game and a 28% chance of winning the Mississippi State game just doesn't seem right to me. I think there should be a much wider gap between those road two game. Teams.
They're respecting the road game.
A road game deep in the SEC territory, I guess, but. Maybe that's important to robots, but I would have given. I just
robots
feel like they
love the SEC, man. You should know.
They do. The robots love the SEC. That's the quote for tonight's show. That's robots right. Love the SEC.
Robots love the SEC. They do.
So anyway, I don't even know what I'm talking about anymore. But I feel like those two. I feel like there should be a wider gap there. What I do find fascinating, though, and you highlighted that, is the difference between the games where we have the low chance of winning and everything else. I mean, nothing's really in that middle range, right? I mean, Utah and Boise State may be in the 60s, but basically this computer is telling you, hey, BYU fans, you have three games that you're not going to win. But you'll probably win everything else.
Do you want me to throw some cold water on this?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I do.
I'm about to throw some cold water, and this is brand new, okay? This is not from the last segment.
Oh, man, this is going to be great.
Right? Which nobody cares about. Like, can you please stop talking about
that? Talking about the show that never was.
Hey!
Sorry, everybody.
We recorded 42 minutes!
We lived in that show.
For 42 minutes!
I put my heart and soul into that show.
That's right. It was the best show in the history of podcasting. All right. If you add all the probabilities together, as calculated by the FBI... We don't win 10 games. See, that's the problem with the analysis. Nothing against Jeremy.
See, now you're doing more math. Leave the math to the robots.
I am not. If you add all those probabilities together, you get 8.8, or call it 9 wins. They are not predicting us to win 10, because that's not how it works, right? That's not, you know, it is binary in that you win or you lose, but what they're predicting is, you know, in this universe, there's a lot of possibilities, though, right? Like, based on what you see here, 10 is certainly very, very possible. But the most likely outcome is probably something you end up dropping one of those games against Utah, Boise State, or East Carolina, right? Because right. There's a lot of chance if you add those three together. So, you know, but quite frankly, those are the six games, right? Outside of that, I'm not worried about anybody else on this schedule. I'm not worried about Utah State, Fresno, UNLV, Hawaii. I'm not really that worried about it. It's those six games, the three ones where we're favored to lose.
Yeah, that's not unfavored? The way you say that.
I don't know. And then the Utah...
I think you just say that you just call us an underdog in those games. I'd favored to lose. That doesn't make any sense. Is that... I think technically he's an oxymoron.
You're an ox and a moron. Name the there movie.
I just handed that one to you.
Name the movie. Do you know?
I can't. I don't know what movie it's from. I can't remember. I'm drawing a blank.
It's Sylvester Stallone. He plays a gangster. It's a comedy. I can't remember it. Anyway, Utah, Boise State, and East Carolina. And I only throw East Carolina in there because it's on the road on the other side of the country. But they're not particularly good either. So, Matt, I think this is a 9-10 win team. A lot of this is going to depend, but these things are
fluid.
How
did you get from 8.8 to 9-10?
Because you're favored to win 10 games, just like we talked about. I'm just saying the more likely is 9. But you could win 10. The range here is massive. You could win, I don't think it's crazy to say you only win 8. Okay, anything below 8... I think you're getting a little crazy. And you could win 11.
But that's really what this is telling us, right?
Yeah.
Is if you take that 8.8 you talked about, right? So now that gets you in that 8 to 9 range. But if you look at the games individually, the upside is that 10 to 11 range. So this is telling you that you should expect somewhere between 8 and 11 wins.
Precisely. The robots have spoken.
Especially with a bowl game. Way to go, robots.
Way to go, robots. And a bowl game that's likely not to be against a stellar team. So, Matt, let's talk about LSU. You live in Baton Rouge, and I'd love to hear your perspective on something. So, last year, Les Miles is fired in the middle of the season, which, by the way, I think is nuts, but we don't need to spend a lot of time on that. But anyway, the Mad Hatter is out. Ed Orgeron is brought in as a interim coach and then has that label removed and is named the coach. That didn't technically happen in the offseason. That all happened before the end of the year. But I'm curious how folks view that in Baton Rouge. Are they behind Orgeron? Or if he has a rough start to the season, are the pitchforks going to come out, and is his seat going to get suddenly hot?
Well, there's a couple things that are interesting about this, right? And, one is the firing of Les Miles, which I feel like Les Miles is fired basically because he can't beat Nick Saban, right? And there's a lot of coaches that can't beat Nick Saban. There's a lot of criticism about the offense being too vanilla and, you know, that college football has evolved past the 3 yards and a pile of dust that Les Miles seemed to be married to. But if you go back...
Did Dabo Sweeney, is he the only guy, though, then that doesn't get fired in all of college football? Because he seems to be the only guy that can beat Saban. I'm just
right.
saying.
So if you're going to fire everybody, right?
If that's your threshold, everybody. You know, you're going to be firing a lot of people.
But you got to understand how LSU feels about Saban, right? Like, the emotions there are a little bit different. But if you go back to last year and think about some of the names that they were talking about into this slot, you know, you had Tom Herman, who was kind of the coach du jour, the star, the coaching carousel at the end of the year. I think a lot of the LSU fans wanted to see Jimbo Fisher come in and take the job. I mean, Hugh Freeze, who for obvious reasons, I think they're glad that it wasn't him. And Ed Orgeron.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Think about that.
Yeah, he was on the list.
All the programs that flirted with him over the last couple of years. Oh, that's a terrible word to have used, flirted.
That's awkward. But yeah, so I think if you're LSU, you feel like you dodged a bullet there, right? Cliff Kingsbury, I think, was also on the list, but probably no real big chance that he actually takes that job.
Sure, sure.
You know, Lane Kiffin, you don't want Lane Kiffin, right? So what happens is Herman ends up at Texas. Jimbo Fisher, who is probably the odds-on favorite for most of the process, apparently did not impress when he came in in conversations they had. I don't know if they interviewed him or what the situation was, but at some point it kind of lost his luster on Jimbo Fisher. And then you end up with this Ed Orgeron, who's this guy, he's a local guy. He talks like a local, you know, players coming into Louisiana from other parts of the country probably need a translator to listen to what he's saying. He's the type of guy who looks like he wrestles alligators, you know, just to warm up in the morning. He might, I don't know. He might, but he is Southern Louisiana. And I think that has been a reason for fans here to get behind him. I think everybody was impressed with what he did in the situation he was handed last year. You know, he's now had two good runs as an interim coach somewhere. So there's a lot of reasons locally for them to be excited about Coach O. And I don't know how hot his seat gets if, you know, they're not world beaters this year. I think he does have a little bit of slack. But, you know, you're talking about a fan base and a program that wants to compete and be significant at the national level all of the time. So he doesn't get two mediocre years before people are, you know, that's for sure.
Can I give you a little history lesson?
Oh boy, here we go.
Listeners. Okay. What was Nick Saban's first year? How'd they do?
I'd have to look that up.
8-4. I've got it in front of me. I'm just being my usual.
I love it when you look this stuff up and then you ask me like, hey, do you know how many passing yards
the
quarterback that you at Hawaii from 1988 through?
Come on. I've never asked anything quite that obscure.
I'm gonna Google that number right now.
So he's 8-4 in his first year, okay? And third in the SEC West and finished 22nd in the country. This is after coming over from Michigan State, where he had gone 9-2. All right. By the way, he was only 34-24 at Michigan State. He only had one good year there, by the way. It's kind of interesting that LSU hired him a little different in 2000, the expectations versus when Saban was, when, you know, Orgeron, Les Miles was let go, right? And then he goes 10-3 and has a great year. They go to the Sugar Bowl, win the division. Then he's 8-5, unranked, okay? Then has the big year, right? The 2003 National Championship, Sugar Bowl, 13-1, all that stuff, right? And then he goes 9-3 on his way out. He won the division twice, okay? So what? Here's the history lesson. How many times are they going to end up winning the division?
Not every year.
Right. So what does success look like if you're LSU? That's the problem right now. That, like you said, that's their expectation, is they want to be nationally relevant. What about winning their division?
But, you know, if you win that division, you're nationally relevant.
Oh, you absolutely are, for sure. But I'm just saying, you could be nationally relevant, I guess, and not win that division, depending on the year, right? I don't know. Yeah,
that's
a good point.
That's a good point.
I'm just saying, historically, they certainly have some great seasons. I just think, like, you know, the expectations can be a little wacky. You know, obviously with Auburn, Texas A&M, and Bama, and Arkansas, and, you know, Mississippi State, Mississippi, that those are all names that mean something in college football in that division, right? SEC East has, you know, it's like the junior division. You've got Kentucky and Vanderbilt who don't mean something at the national level, right? And Arkansas, I guess, hasn't historically meant much in our lifetimes, but they certainly have over time. So, Matt, let's talk about some of the things that are happening for LSU. They lost four guys on that really good defense from last year to the NFL. I think one of the biggest questions that they have going for them is really it comes down to, can they reload with a bunch of really great recruits, right? So it's not as if they're going down to nothing. But can they reload after losing, you know, some fantastic players to the NFL? Matt, can they? Are they going to be as good as last year? Or do you think they take a step back? They lost, I mean, Beckwith and Riley combined for 184 tackles last year. Okay? The linebackers. 184 tackles. Two guys. Gone.
But, you know, this is still a defense. I think they've got four returning senior defensive linemen.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, these are they're experienced players. I mean, they've got their backups have backups. So I don't know that there is as deep of a drop in a program like this when you lose those guys as one might expect when you listen to those numbers.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and so I don't know that makes me feel any better. You know, the thing that I think about here is we talked a lot about our defense, and I'm gonna just flip over here to the offensive side of the ball for LSU for a second.
Yeah, fire away.
Is, you know, you're looking at a quarterback, this Etling kid, who we both know from his Purdue days, which is crazy to me that Purdue's got these quarterbacks that leave and go to these other programs. But,
well, you know, if you were them, wouldn't you leave?
Well, yeah, but my question is, I mean, I'm sure Danny's a nice kid, but my question is, like, how do they end up at Florida and LSU? Like, what did they do? What did they do? Like, who saw that coming, right?
Well, here's the thing. Etling's not great.
Well, right? And if you look at it, well, you look at his numbers, right, from 2016. So about 2,100 yards, 60% completion rate, 11 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. Okay, not great. And he had back surgery during the offseason. So I understand that an injured back can impact the numbers he threw last year, but I also understand that back surgery is a very difficult thing to come back from.
Right,
back injuries, and I don't know exactly what the injury is, but this does not bode well for Danny Etling's future. And then he's the only guy they've got on the roster who's thrown a pass in college.
Yeah, and it's not as if the challengers, nobody sitting on that bench is a world beater. Right?
Right.
You know, maybe Lindsey Scott, but he's 5'11", okay? There's a reason he's not playing, though he was very good in high school, why he's not playing at maybe, say, one of the more quarterback schools, right? And then, you know, Justin McMillan, you know, who looked good in spring, they said. So the real question is, and then they've got the Miles Brennan, and he's the, you know, the high school guy coming. He's maybe the biggest stud. To be on this team as far as recruitment goes. I don't think, you know, he even probably sees it down. But anyway, Matt, this is their biggest question mark, isn't it? I mean, we'll get to Geis here in a second, but there's no question they have maybe the best running back in college football.
Yeah, if Etling is the question mark, Darius Geis is the answer.
Yeah, right, right. The answer is Danny, turn around and hand it to Geis.
Right. And who I think, you know, and especially when you compare to Fournette's, you know, because he was playing hurt last year a lot, right? But I think most of last year, I would have preferred Geis. I mean, this is a guy, he's a very versatile player, can do a lot of different things. You know, he's on watch lists for 100 different awards or whatever he is. And, but really talented athlete that can do some amazing things. So this is really the guy in terms of what we need to worry about on BYU's defense is the ability to trap this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he is the player that could, even if we have a good defense, he could rush for 200 yards.
Yeah.
And we could still have a top 35 defense. Right. And he's that good. And their offensive line is that good. I mean, what did he average per carry last year? I was trying to look it up and my computer kind of froze up on me, but they we're talking about, you know, an elite Heisman Trophy candidate runner, right? So this is going to be very interesting as far as, you know, guys, like you said, there's a statistical argument to be made, 7.6 yards per carry last year. Okay.
It's insane.
Yeah. Had a 96-yard run. Obviously, Fournette was unbelievable and was a great college running back. Geis might be even better, and that's not exaggeration. That's real.
Exaggeration? That's not even a real thing.
That's exactly right. That's right. It's not. It's not a real thing. All right, Matt. Let's finish up here, and say, you know, LSU. Obviously, people are saying they're going to beat us. I think that's kind of a given in most cases. Matt, a lot of predictions have them about 9 wins and second in the SEC West, still second dog to Alabama. So, Matt, if that happens and they're 9-3, it sounds like you're saying Orgeron's in. It's no one's going to start barking yet.
I don't think so, but you know I've lived here like 8 months or whatever, but. I feel like he gets a little bit of a longer leash than that.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah, for sure. If they're 9-3 and their losses are, you know, let's see.
What's interesting is if you go to the FBI ranking, you go to the FPI ranking on the ESPN website for LSU schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? It is a different animal. They've got one game where they're heavy underdog, which is Alabama, right? Where they're given this 20.2%. Then everything else is rounds up to 50% or better. I mean, right. At Florida, they're right at 50%. Auburn, and they were a play away from Auburn last year. They were a play away from winning that game.
Yeah, yeah.
46%. And everything else, I mean, then you get a pretty dramatic shot up into the 70s, 80s, and 90s after that. You know, they're 86 against us. You got Chattanooga, Troy, Syracuse, you know, some of these other teams. So I feel like, you know, they could easily get to 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They easily get to 10 wins.
Yeah. Here's the thing. For them, you look at it, Tennessee, Auburn, and Florida are basically coin flips, right? Two of those are road games. One of them is at home, Auburn. But tough road games against Florida and should be a pretty decent Tennessee team as well. And don't sleep on that, you know, on Texas A&M. But like you said, you know, those are four games that are coin flips. And the problem with coin flips are you may win all four or you may lose all four, right? And obviously the Alabama game, they're not likely to win that game. But But who knows? You know, this could be the year. But this could be everything for them. That we talked about, you know, the range of possibilities for them. The same thing. Their average record, according to FBI, is 8.4 wins. Okay, I think their range goes from 6, Matt, to undefeated. That's where the range is. They could be playing for national championships in the college football playoff at the end, or sneaking into a bowl game. Like, that's the range because of how tough their schedule is.
And I think that's the robots telling us that they're really not sure what to expect out of a new coaching staff.
Oh, sure.
Not all new, and some real question marks at quarterback.
But right? They're going to play.
The upside is high. But I think the realistic look here is probably eight in that 8 to 9 win range, right?
Yeah.
But the upside here is, you know, the upside is great.
Yeah. Yeah. There is. I mean, they're going to be a good team, and we've said this before. Neither of us expect BYU to beat them. I don't think that's a realistic expectation. Well, anyway, Matt, that's LSU. That's LSU. We are out of time. We had another tweet back question from Sean Ritchie. Sean, he asked about, have we ever done a segment on the most underrated BYU quarterbacks? I can't say we've ever done a segment, but we have talked.
We have to do this.
We will do it, Sean. So that's at Dr. Ted on Twitter. We will do that, Sean. We will do that on a future show. That's an excellent question. When I saw the question on Twitter, I had a couple of guys come to my mind and did a little research. So we'll put that on the agenda. We will not be there next week. I am on vacation and will not be recording. So we'll be back in 2 weeks, Matt. In 2 weeks. Oh, boy. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for what we're going to do in 2 weeks?
Oh, man.
We're going to season preview part one.
Oh, the season is upon us, my friend.
The season preview part one, Matt. We're going to preview the defense. We're going to make ridiculous predictions.
Way too early predictions that we're completely unqualified to make.
And, Matt, if you're ready for this, our 300th episode, if everything lines up the way I've got it lined up today, our 300th episode, Matt, it will happen after the Mississippi, will be a recap of the Mississippi State game.
Oh, that's amazing.
Just saying, that's what we're looking at, 300th episode. Well, Wow. Everybody, thank you for downloading and listening. As we said before, go out and take, in the show notes, go take the Rise and Shout listener survey. Also, go donate to Matt's efforts for the New York City Marathon, and that'll be in the show notes as well. He's running for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, so that'll be in the show notes. Go and do that. Matt, anything else you want to add?
I the closer we get, I just can't wait for football to start.
Can't wait for football, and you can't wait to run 50 miles in a week.
Oh, it's going to be the best. I'm looking forward to my runs this week.
I pulled something just you talking about your runs. I've got a hamstring thing.
When I don't run now, I get grouchy. And I've become one of those people, that's all I talk about is running.
I know. It's kind of annoying.
We've stayed away from it on the show, but you know, for the past couple of years while I've been doing it. And we will continue to. I will just talk about it in the context of this fundraising effort. But man, it's fun.
Yeah, who would use this podcast to talk about their own personal interests? That's ridiculous.
That's what the Bleep podcast is for.
I would never do that. Oh, yeah. By the way, go check out Bleep. We just did an episode on the Planet of the Apes movies. So at Bleep Podcast on Twitter, if you want to check that out. We just did. If you like those movies, by the way, War of the Planet of the Apes was terrific. You should go watch all three of those movies if you haven't. Anyway, well, Matt. Thanks for taking another ride here on episode 288.
You know what? Episode 288 was pretty good the second time. I know we lost the first recording, but
yeah.
You really brought it tonight, Adam.
Yeah,
good job.
Thank you. I really did bring it tonight. I did. I really did. You, well, let's just say we'll give you a good week off.
Hey, listen. Sometimes you just got to aim for mediocrity.
Hey, I do that. That you just define my life.
Yes, I did. Yes, I certainly did.
All right. Well, thank you guys for downloading and listening. Go check out this show and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcasts. Thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!